Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her. And it is a delight to see all of you here this morning. I've been gone for a couple of weeks, and it's so nice to see everyone. I want to say welcome to the people online and to the people in Forest Hall. We've just opened Forest Hall due to the crowding, so we can be just a little bit more open up here. And so we're asking people to sit down there maybe once a month to kind of open up our space a little bit. And people downstairs will be able to sing hymns together. We have joys and sorrows stones and offering and greeting each other. So all the things are happening downstairs as well. And I just want to say that everyone is welcome here, no matter who you love or how you express your gender. No matter if you find today disappointing or if the smell is so good that it does not matter. Welcome to everybody who's enjoying the spring or those like me who have allergies and kind of go back and forth between enjoyment and misery. So here it is. So everyone's welcome, no matter how you're feeling today, whether you're happy or whether you're sad. So I have a couple of announcements. The first is that we are having a connections fair downstairs, which can help you know all the activities that are happening in the congregation, places where you can be of service, places where you can engage in community. There's going to be all kinds of possibilities. So that's really helpful to anyone, actually, because there might be new things you're unaware of if you've been coming a longer time. And certainly if you're newer here, it's really helpful to get a sense of all the things that are happening. And we also, if you're newer here, if you sign up on the little pieces of paper in the chairs in front of you, you can get our e-blast, which every week shares all the events that are happening during the week. So now I would like to take time for everyone to greet each other. Or wait, are we singing first? It's really bad for me when I don't hold my thing. So we're going to greet each other. And what I want you to answer each other today is what inspires you. And so I'd love you to talk to two or three people and share something that inspires you. Not a novel, like maybe a sentence or two. Or a word. Okay. Go. So what inspires you, Christine? The season. Hi.
I always love.
Good morning, Bruce. I love your band.
It's like,
good
how
morning.
Hard is it to do a giant mural?
Oh, you want some of that?
They're having to do it with Brett Beagle.
Cool, hon. It's a chalice.
Mother of living, Mars is no carol.
So those words are by the poet Rumi. And I would like to invite Ada up to light our chalice this morning. I'm not sure who's lighting it downstairs. I think Salima. And our chalice lighting words are from Walt Whitman. This is what you should do. Love the earth and sun and animals. Despise riches. Give alms to everyone who asks. Stand up for the stupid and crazy. Devote your income and labor to others. Hate tyrants. Argue not concerning God. Have patience and indulgence toward the people. Re-examine all you have been taught, told in school or church or in any book. Dismiss what insults your very soul, and your flesh shall become a great poem. May this congregation and our faith help you become a great poem. Let us say our affirmation together.
Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful
and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors.
Good morning.
Morning, morning.
From Psalm 98. Oh, sing a new song to the eternal. Shout praise. All earth break into music and song. Praise the eternal with lyre and song, with trumpets and the blast of a ram's horn. Shout for joy before the eternal. Let the sea and all within it thunder its praise, the world and its inhabitants. Let the rivers clap their hands. Let the mountains sing for joy. Oh, sing a new song before the eternal. And I invite you to rise as you are willing and able to sing Spirit of Light.
Here if they want. We're going to have one thing, gratitude and giving, and then we will have our story.
So much to be grateful for in the riches of this poetry service. May the words of Walt Whitman inspire you to be your best. May Ellen Bass's humor help you find levity in your personal joys and sorrows. And may you hear the call of the wild geese in Mary Oliver's poem, pulling you deeper into the world and your own imagination. From the place of gratitude for the poetry that helps us see ourselves more clearly and love the parts of ourselves that at times feel unlovable, I invite you to give of your own heart to your own heart and beyond. Would the ushers please come forward? Thank you. These gifts, and also for the gift of your presence this morning. And now we will speak together the words of gratitude. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege.
Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
I thought so. Okay, Frederick by Leo Liani. All along the meadow, where the cows grazed and the horses ran, there was an old stone wall. In that wall, not far from the barn and the granary, a chatty family of field mice had their home. But the farmers had moved away, the barn was abandoned, and the granary stood empty. And since winter was not far off, the little mice began to gather corn and nuts and wheat and straw. They all worked day and night, all except Frederick. "Frederick, why don't you work?" they asked. "I do work," said Frederick. "I gather sun rays for the cold, dark winter days." And when they saw Frederick sitting there staring at the meadow, they said, "And now, Frederick?" "I gather colors," answered Frederick simply, "for the winter is gray." And once Frederick seemed half asleep. "Are you dreaming, Frederick?" they asked reproachfully. But Frederick said, "Oh no, I am gathering words, for the winter days are long and many and will run out of things to say." The winter days came, and when the first snow fell, the five little field mice took to their hideout in the stones. In the beginning, there was lots to eat, and the mice told stories of foolish foxes and silly cats. They were a happy family. But little by little, they had nibbled up most of the nuts and berries. The straw was gone, and the corn was only a memory. It was cold in the wall, and no one felt like chatting. Then they remembered what Frederick had said about sun rays and colors and words. "What about your supplies, Frederick?" they asked. "Close your eyes," said Frederick as he climbed on a big stone. "Now I send you the rays of the sun. Do you feel how their golden glow?" And as Frederick spoke of the sun, the four little mice began to feel warmer. Was it Frederick's voice? Was it magic? "And how about the colors, Frederick?" they asked anxiously. "Close your eyes again," Frederick said. And when he told them of the blue periwinkles, the red poppies in the yellow wheat, and the green leaves of the berry bush, they saw the colors as clearly as if they had been painted in their minds. "And the words, Frederick?" Frederick cleared his throat, waited a moment, and then, as if from a stage, he said, "Who scatters snowflakes? Who melts the ice? Who spoils the weather? Who makes it nice? Who grows the four-leaf clovers in June? Who dims the daylight? Who lights the moon? Four little field mice who live in the sky. Four little field mice like you and I. One is the spring mouse who turns on the showers. Then comes the summer who paints in the flowers. The fall mouse is next with walnuts and wheat, and winter is last with cold little feet. Aren't we lucky the seasons are four? Think of a year with one less or one more." When Frederick was finished, they all applauded. "But Frederick," they said, "you are a poet." Frederick blushed, took a bow, and said shyly, "I know it." We will now sing the children to their classes. We open Joys and Sorrows with the poem Relax by Ellen Bass. Bad things are going to happen. Your tomatoes will grow a fungus, and your cat will get run over. Someone will leave the bag with the ice cream melting in your car and throw your blue cashmere sweater in the dryer. Your husband will sleep with a girl your daughter's age, her breast spilling out of her blouse. Your wife will remember she's a lesbian and leave you for the woman next door. The other cat, the one you never really liked, will contract a disease that requires you to pry open its feverish mouth every 4 hours. Your parents will die. No matter how many vitamins you take, how much Pilates, you'll lose your keys, your hair, and your memory. If your daughter doesn't plug her heart into every live socket she passes, you'll come home to find your son has emptied the refrigerator, dragged it to the curb, and called the used appliance store for a pickup. Drug money. There's a Buddhist story of a woman chased by a tiger. When she comes to a cliff, she sees a sturdy vine and climbs halfway down. But there's also a tiger below. And two mice, one white, one black, scurry out and begin to gnaw at the vine. At this point, she notices a wild strawberry growing from a crevice. She looks up, down, at the mice. Then she eats the strawberry. So here's the view, the breeze, the pulse in your throat. Your wallen will get stolen. You'll get fat, slip on the bathroom tiles of a foreign hotel, and crack your hip. You'll be lonely. Oh, taste how sweet and tart the red juice is. The tiny seeds crunch between your teeth. So now, why don't we each come forward and place a stone for the hard things, or from the strawberries you savor, so we can hold all of this in community. Upstairs, Christine will help you release row by row to place your joy and sorrow. And Salima will help you place the stones downstairs. And people online can share their joys and sorrows in the live feed in the chat. You may come forward now.
This week will be my 3-year anniversary of starting hormone therapy.
The new job that I got that had me away on Sunday mornings just closed, so I'm happy to be back here.
I got to celebrate with my niece because she passed a class that she retook, and she's not celebrating the small things, and she got to practice that this week.
I'm feeling cautiously optimistic about what's going on with Harper. So if you could keep thinking your good thoughts for her, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
For the thousands of people I saw downtown yesterday, and for a group of scientists holding a protest sign.
I was inspired yesterday, and I learned that there were over 5 million of us just on the West Coast.
This is a stone from my friend Don Tarbutton, who died last week. Very dear friend. He was a Unitarian Universalist hospice chaplain who ended his life doing voluntary stopping eating and drinking because of an Alzheimer's diagnosis. Very pro-death by dignity and death education. If anybody has questions about that, feel free to talk to me anytime.
And I drop one last stone for all the joys and sorrows that remain in our hearts and in the world.
A poem to meditate on. One of the most sacred poems in the UU tradition, Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to love with the soft animal body of your love. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clear blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Let us take a moment of silence.
Psalm 23. The divine is my shepherd. I lack nothing. She makes me lie down in green pastures. She leads me beside quiet waters. She refreshes my soul. They guide me along the right paths for their name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley,
I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the divine forever.
From that sacred text to one that is deeply sacred to me, again by Mary Oliver, in Blackwater Woods. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating over the blue shoulders of the ponds. And every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Each year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this, the fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your own bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes, to let it go, to let it go.
So April is National Poetry Month. And it seemed appropriate this month to address the question that Christine, our lay leader today, poised when she bought my sermon at the auction last October. She wrote me, "One of the biggest pulls for me into the Unitarian Universalist Church is that poetry seems to be one of our primary main scriptures or sources, instead of the Bible or other more traditional sources. How did poetry become our scripture, our mode of inspirational readings?" Sacred texts, such as the Bible, have been used by many faiths over centuries. They probe the depths of human experience, our connections to the mystery of life, and our yearnings. They ask what it means to live both in amazement and resilience. They point to ways of living as humans. They are often, like the Bible is, a jumble of stories, poetry, instruction, and paradoxes. They are meant at their core to be gnawed at by seekers. Often religious fundamentalists, secular people, and some Unitarian Universalists freeze sacred texts into a literal meaning that is either embraced or rejected. And I find this to be an inaccurate reading of these texts. I believe they are meant to be explored as metaphors to understand our experiences and discover expressions of gratitude, yearning, pain, or guidance in difficult times. The Psalms are such sacred writing. The 98th Psalm, which we heard this morning, celebrates the beauty of the world. The 23rd Psalm offers words of comfort that even avowed atheists often find peaceful and meaningful in difficult times. Ecclesiastes is my favorite book in the Bible. It is the struggle of the writer to find true meaning in life and is written as poetry. This struggle is one nearly all of us, millennia after it was written, would recognize. Many know the song "Turn, Turn, Turn." Its lyrics are found in Ecclesiastes, as are the words "From Dust in the Wind" by Kansas. Much of the Bible, particularly the wisdom books, which are the Psalms, Ecclesiastes, and others, are in the form that we call poetry. They are rhythmic and lyrical.
The word psalm means song. And the 105 we know are actually lyrics to music that we have never heard. Most sacred writings were originally told person to person, like the Odyssey, and their rhyme and music helped them be easily memorized. When Muhammad wrote the Quran, he wrote it in a complicated form of poetry that was popular among Arabian people at the time. The Quran was considered the ultimate expression of that form. And one reason that people believed it was a work inspired by God. In legend, one man, a skeptic of this new faith, heard just minutes of recitation and was so struck by its amazing beauty, fell to the ground and converted instantly. And we do know, truly, that many converted simply at the wonder of that poetry. Today, Muslims sing the Quran and do not consider translations to be true representatives of the text, as they lack the exquisiteness of the Arabic. The Vedas, foundational to Hinduism, are the oldest sacred texts we know. They were written primarily in poetic form. And the Vedas revere the poet. They consider poets essential to connections between humans and the spiritual realms. The Vedas said, "The poet creates forms of beauty in heaven, but these forms are not made in the void. It is the earth that is raised to heaven and transmuted into divine truth forms. The union of earth and heaven is the source of joy, the anatta, that the poet unseals and distributes." Nearly 3,500 years later, the UU minister Laurel Hallman says something similar about the ways both poetry and sacred texts connect people to the spiritual. "The communication from person to person and generation to generation is a kind of truth that is based on reality. As Bernard Meland, who was a theologian, once said, it is truth based on the reality that we live more deeply than we can think." She called this the religious existential reality, or we could say the spiritual dimension, or that which tends our spirits, or the depths of lived experience that was grounded, she said, in the experience of existence, as well as that place where we live more deeply than we can think. She continued, "If the religious existential reality is grounded in the experience of existence, and where we live more deeply than we can think, then we had better find ways to say that which is deeper than we can speak." And her answer was poetry and sacred text. She said, "I believe that poetry is scripture. I believe that scripture is poetry. I believe that poetry is the way deep truth is transmitted person to person, generation to generation. I believe that what Emily Dickinson said, tell the truth, but tell it slant, she was speaking of metaphorical truth, the poetic truth that nourishes the heart and opens the mind and communicates the depths." The writers of the Vedas called poets priests long ago. The Unitarian Ralph Waldo Emerson first did so in our tradition. He says, like the Vedas and like Hallman, that the poet is the sayer, the namer, and represents beauty. We saw the way the poet does this in our story this morning. This view is not surprising from Emerson. He was the theologian who first said that people could directly experience the holy dimension of life, particularly in nature, without the intervention of the church. And this continues to be our belief as Unitarian Universalists to this day. We say in our statement of inspiration, direct experiences of transcending mystery and wonder are primary sources of UU inspiration. These experiences open our hearts, renew our spirits, and transform our lives. We also believe, as it is said in religious language, that revelation is open. Not all faiths believe that. And this means that we believe that new ways are always becoming available to understand and interpret the direct experiences of transcending mystery and wonder and those places that are deeper than we can speak. We believe we can keep learning about the holy and spiritual dimensions of life, or as the Vedas called it, learning about the union of earth and heaven. We say this clearly in our values statement. Openness to change is fundamental to our Unitarian Universalist heritage, never complete and never perfect. As Unitarian Universalists came into the 20th and 21st centuries, people joined after leaving biblical-based traditions. These people did not want services stemming from readings of the Bible, as was traditional. Often their former congregations taught the Bible as a literal text and said that their interpretations of the Bible meant that God required obedience to a particular way of being human. And those entering UU congregations thought that was true, untrue at very best, or abusing at worst. So for many years, many Unitarian Universalist congregations, particularly in the fellowship movements in the West, of which WUF is a part, did not use any texts at all in their services, preferring a less spiritual focus, one that did not touch mystery or that place where we live more deeply than we think. Then this began to change. No one I asked knew exactly when. Perhaps the 1970s? Congregations began to feel a need to address the spiritual needs of their membership. A natural place to look was the modern poets, who pointed toward that slippery dimension of life that opened hearts, renewed spirits, and transformed lives. So poems began to be read in UU worship services. By 1994, when our gray hymnal, Singing in the Living Tradition, was published, poetry was well represented through the reading section, which is in the back of the book. The process continued with when Hallman delivered the Berry Street Address in 2003, a yearly talk that has been delivered to UU ministers about the state of our faith for over 200 years. There, she advocated both poetry and religious language as ways to experience that deeper dimension of our lives. Poets were also well represented in the 2015 Lifting Our Voices, a slim book of readings created by the Unitarian Universalist Association. Mary Oliver has been called the unofficial poet laureate of Unitarian Universalism. Her poetry follows the tradition of Emerson, discovering within the wild world the questions and answers about human life. Some of Oliver's poems are considered almost canon in our faith, including those two that we heard this morning. The final words of Wild Geese reverberate in many Unitarian Universalist souls. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, The world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Words from In Blackwater Woods are frequently used in UU memorials, including the ones that I officiate at. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends upon it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. The third poem that we revere is called The Summer Day, which every time I read it, challenges me to pay attention and live my life fully. Here it is. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down in the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? There are many, many poets who speak to us. Rumi, who wrote the words in our opening hymn, and Walt Whitman, who wrote our chalice lighting, and Ellen Bass, who wrote our words before joys and sorrows. There are also, to just name a few, Maya Angelou, Langston Hughes, Renee Maria Rilke, Wendell Berry, David White, T.S. Eliot, Rosemary Wetola Tromer, Denise Levertov, and Lynn Unger. Just yesterday, Lynn Unger, a UU minister and poet who lives across the river in Vancouver, published this poem for this moment, offering us a resource to tend our spirits, pointing to what is deeper than we can say, reminding us of grace and connection between earth and heaven. I don't know how this all turns out, and neither do you, but I have to confess it doesn't look good. I wish we were headed for a picnic, for a waltz in the park. I wish we were not ruled by broken men who want to damage everything that they cannot possess. I wish I could tell you what we do now. The street is littered with the petals of cherries that bloomed before the big wind came. Tonight there will be frost, and tender buds will burn. But still, the woods are unfolding into green, and just outside my door, some frog is bellowing for all it's worth. Who knows what happens next? All I can tell you is that fields are ablaze with dandelions who have never known the meaning of defeat. These are all poets who start in the lived experience of the world and point to the more beyond. And this is what our faith has at its foundation, our experience. We do not take the words of ancient text and a particular interpretation of it to tell us how to understand the experiences of our lives and thus how to live them. Instead, we create our own theologies. But it is helpful to have the poets, both those who wrote the words of our sacred texts and those who today keep revelation open, offering us truths about living as human beings in this holy universe. So let us sing the words from Ecclesiastes, written perhaps by King Solomon 3,000 years ago, or maybe the poet Qu-Hileth 2,500 years ago. Turn, turn, turn. You may rise for this hymn. Benediction is from T.S. Eliot. What we call a beginning, if often the end, and to make the end is to make a beginning. The end is where we start from. We shall not cease from all our exploring, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know it for the first time. We extinguish the flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with us until we meet again. We will now sing Carry the Flame. The front will face the back, and the back the front, and we will sing.